Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1038. Happy everything. Whatever you celebrated, happy that. Or if you didn't celebrate anything, I hope you've had a great week. Has anyone else had the experience where you keep thinking it's the end of the year and forgetting it's the end of the fucking decade? That's weird, right? It's the end of the decade, going into a new decade. Speaking of new decade things, I am announcing the Wizard Guitar Tour, which is the name of my tour for next year. I think I'm doing like 19 cities just between January and July, and then more in the fall and winter of next year. But if you go to id10t.com/tour, we are posting those now. But it's like Columbus, Ohio, and San Francisco, and Sacramento, and oh my God, Minneapolis and Boston and Philly. And so there's a bunch of dates being added. So go onto id10t.com/tour to check out the dates and get tickets for that. And hope to see you out there. And yes, of course, I'm going to bring the wizard guitar, which is my guitar, which has a big wizard and a dragon painted on it. I will see you hopefully around that time, whenever that is in your city. Let's talk about the Corkboard events at id10t.com. Chad writes, my name is Chad Waller, and I've got a melodic death metal project called Einonym. Melodic death metal. Is that a thing? I love that that's a thing. I've just released my first album, Follow the Witch, which can also be found on Bandcamp, Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, and all the other stores. It's free to download. What's cool about this album is that everything aside from my voice is done with virtual instruments. I'm actually musically illiterate. Can't play anything. Can't read sheet music either. But we live in a time where that doesn't really matter because computers are giant brain things and YouTube can teach us how to do basically anything. Chad Waller, I love you because that is brilliant. I love the idea that, like, you're not even going to let not being able to play an instrument stop you from making music. And you're absolutely right. There's no excuse anymore with computers that we can actually just make the things that we want. So I have mad respect for that. And I salute you. And I appreciate that. And people should go download your melodic death metal album. Thank you for doing that. And thank you for being a shiny example of what just going out and making a thing can look like. This episode is Chris Sullivan and Michael Rosenbaum, two dear friends of mine. Sully was on way earlier in the year. He, of course, is on This Is Us on NBC. He was Taserface in Guardians of the Galaxy. He's an incredibly talented performer, musician. And then Michael Rosenbaum, who was also on the podcast a while back, he also has a great podcast called Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum, which I've been on. And Rosie and Sully. Rosenbaum is also an incredibly talented musician, and they together have a fantastic podcast called In Love that Lydia and I did together. It's a podcast about relationships and mental health. And so that is also available wherever you get your podcasts. But I adore these fellas a lot. We talk a lot about dudes and feelings this episode and mental health, but it's just a good, fun, there's depth to it, but there's also a lot of fuck-aroundery on this episode, which is number 1038 with Chris Sullivan and Michael Rosenbaum as we roll the thing.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
So these, the Broadway musical that just won Best New Musical,
yes,
called Hadestown.
Yes.
I did the original production of it right before I left to go do This Is Us.
And oh, my gosh.
And we used these microphones in our production.
Oh, yeah. These microphones are fantastic.
They're really great.
Yeah. Your Trumpet Labs.
Oh, I wasn't even ready for that. Were you taking pictures?
I'm not going to post it.
That's just for us?
I mean, I will. No,
it's just, a review at the end of the day.
Here's what
let's
I did.
Take a look
just,
back.
Movies out from. I just like.
Let's take a look
like
back.
That.
What's that from?
What is? I don't know what that's from.
I just like.
Why'd you kill Cyrus?
I just like doing stuff like that.
What is that?
The Warriors, David Patrick.
Oh my God! Oh my God! That's a deep pull.
I'm close to getting Walter Hill.
Oh really?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to talk about Beverly Hills Cop?
Oh, you won't tell me at all, man.
There's a really interesting-looking book that I want to get about basically, like, 80s comedies. Like, the comedies of the 80s and a lot of how, like, a lot of SNL people, like, folded into becoming film stars. And I think it heavily focuses on Eddie Murphy and how, you know, he wasn't... It was originally Sylvester Stallone that was supposed to do Beverly Hills Cop.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And then so Eddie Murphy came in, and Stallone's character was a little, like his Axel Foley was slicker, and Eddie Murphy came in, he's like, no, he's a guy from Detroit, he's got to have a shitty car, he's got to have this, like picked out the wardrobe and everything. And it sort of, it in the piece that I saw about the book, it talks about how, he was already a big star by that point, but that made him like,
right.
Like,
could
that
you imagine Stallone,
massive.
Don't you want to kind of see that version? Don't you see like, you're not going to fall for no banana. Could you imagine? I mean, I don't know, but it could be fun, though.
Yeah, I can't see him doing all the characters that Eddie Murphy did. Because that was, you know, you have to imagine if...
How happy were you that Stallone got brought up so soon in this podcast?
Oh, I love it. You should interview him.
It worked. It worked.
I love
really
it.
Well for yeah, this. It was really well.
It's the best Stallone.
It's the best. It's the best non-licensed Stallone.
Yeah. People, a lot of other people do him way better than me.
No, that was a good
Not
one.
Not that I've heard.
Really?
That was a good one, though.
Not that I've heard.
But
Katie? That's right.
What's interesting is that you take these guys who have this sketch comedy backgrounds, and then what do you do with them? And you see... their sketch comedy, like you with Chevy Chase and Fletch, he's doing all the characters. Eddie Murphy's doing all the characters. With Murray and Aykroyd and all those guys, they're doing all these crazy characters. And so I really miss the days of those big event action comedies.
Comedies.
Yeah.
Well, the last one was, Nutty Professor sort of feel, right?
Well,
that was in the 90s. Was that 90s?
Bridesmaids?
Actually, Spy, you know, like Paul Feig made Spy with Melissa McCarthy, and that was that was in that vein of like big budget action comedy, and it was great. So, but there's just, I think, you know, streaming Netflix, it just kills a lot of that because people are like, oh, I can just watch this at home. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they'll go to movies for like Marvel, but will they go see a comedy in a theater? And I think it really has to be some crazy event for them. But again, you can make the argument that, like, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy is essentially an action comedy in a way.
Well, they've all the entire Marvel universe. We were talking about this last week.
Taserface.
Yeah,
Taserface
has this sense of humor that holds it all together. Like it seems like Iron Man started it with that kind of wry wit, and now they all kind of share that sense of.
Well, they all. What I think was brilliant that they all did, that they were all able to do, is, you know, and I'm just assuming this was a Kevin Feige thing, that every film basically has the identity of its director, and the director kind of infuses their voice but still keeps the universe consistent. So you have each one of these really specific yet connected pieces of art,
right?
Which is how, you know, Black Panther has Ryan Coogler's voice to it, and but Ragnarok has Taika's voice to it. Mm-hmm. Somehow they still connect together. Somehow those connect to Avengers, which still connects to Guardians. Like, it's the... the sort of the connection of all of those.
I never thought about it. I never really thought.
But they
about
all
that.
Have
but
their own specific point
they're
of
all,
view.
Yes.
They're not all the same movie with just different characters.
Right.
They all have different voices that still somehow work in symphony together. So it's
which is odd for somebody for a studio that's putting that much money up to also give each of its directors that much of a voice.
And yet it feels like it's risky to not do that because when things get homogenized, then they're just not interesting. You know, it's like the more specific.
It's sort of like when you know what you want, like when you hire an actor because you know exactly what they're going to do. I think that's probably what like Feige and these guys do is like, he's got such a voice and a vision.
Yeah.
And it's his own unique thing. He wants to, like, James wants to be involved with the music and he wants to be involved. I think that is what attracts them. So, like, we like this vision.
Yeah.
And we like this world. He knows what he wants. I think that's the most important with anything, right?
Yeah. And all comics aren't the same. Like, each comic series has its own point of view based on the writer and the artist. And so it's, you know, like it's kind of taking that philosophy and, you know, sinking $250 to $500 million into it.
My only problem is this.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh, geez. All right.
You're going to disagree with me. You? I don't know.
At Michael Rosenbaum.
I think movies, a lot of them are just too long these days. It's driving me up a fucking wall. Can I say F on this show?
I will say this. I will say this. If I see a horror movie that is like 2 hours and 2 minutes, I'm like, too long for horror.
Yeah.
Nightmare on Elm Street, one of the biggest hits horror ever had, was 90 minutes.
Was it a hit? Was
with credits.
82 to 94 minutes is a good
Was it a hit when it came out?
Yeah, I think it was.
Nightmare was a bona fide hit.
That's why they made, you know, 2, 3, 4, you know.
Sure.
But why does a movie need to be, like, 3 hours long? Even if it's not horror. I'm talking any genre. Unless it's like a...
Avengers, I feel like it was warranted because they had an entire...
So many movies to tie up.
So much story to tie up. But then, you know, I really feel like JFK was the movie that started saying to people, sit the fuck down. You're in it, guys.
Do you remember the VHS, the big fat VHS? It was like,
we had to change tapes.
Yeah, who had to change VHS tapes?
Was it a 3-tape set?
It was that in Gettysburg.
Oh, my God.
I'm not watching 2 tapes.
But other than that, I think there are a lot of movies where they are long. And I'm sure it's difficult because I'm sure the directors are like, well, this is what I need to tell this story. Sometimes as an audience member, though, for non-Avengers movies, I will say to myself, like, this could have been 20 minutes shorter. You know?
20? Oh,
20
my God.
Or 30 minutes shorter.
Or how
shorter.
About get to the freaking point?
Right.
Just, I mean, if you get to the point right away in the first 15, 20 minutes, which you're supposed to do, the inciting incident, I mean, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Are we going Robert McKee's story journey? Structure class?
I don't know about that, but I just, when I watch a movie, my attention span's short.
Yeah.
But after about an hour and 20, 30, I'm going, okay, this should be the last 20 minutes of this.
Right.
And when I look at my watch, I don't wear one. But when I say...
When you pull out your phone...
When I look at the phone next to me of the person who's on Facebook or texting and not watching the movie...
And it's you got an hour and 15 left. Uh-huh. It's just... And by the way, studios should think about this, right? I could put more movies, more...
Here's how fucking... Here's how much we've been spoiled with attention spans. There are films that Lydia and I will watch in our bed that we'll get... We'll get exactly the point you're talking about. Hour and a half in and we're like... 65 more minutes and we'll go, let's just finish this tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then we'll watch a Rick and Morty. Like, it's our attention spans have been obliterated that we can't, even in our own homes, watch a 3 hour and 5 minute
movie. Do you think we've seen too many movies too? Like that movie that you were watching, you're like, we get it.
Yes.
We know how this
we've
is
going. We've seen too many movies, and also it's the constant, we're almost burdened by choice. Like the idea that more choice is better. It makes sense to a point, but then at a certain, but beyond that point, we're flawed. Like you fucking open Netflix and it just feels like feels like opening a closet of everything you've ever owned. You're like, I don't know.
I'm overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed. It's like going to Jerry's Deli for lunch. I don't know what the fuck to order. I'm just like, and I end up watching 40 trailers and going to sleep.
At Jerry's Deli? That's weird. How do they allow that?
Well, they're changing the bowling.
Sir, we're closing. You have to wake up, sir.
We should tell people why you guys came on together.
I don't know. This is a great conversation.
First of all, I love both of you. And second of all, you've both been on individually. But then you have started a podcast that Lydia and I came on and had such a good time on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just for a quick sec, at least just talk, just give the nickel pitch for your podcast and then we'll...
Yeah. So we had you guys on one of our best conversations to date. Mm-hmm. And the podcast is called In Love with Michael Rosenbaum and Chris Sullivan.
Yes, and you know, by the way, just a little bit of
pre-stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's get down to the pre-stuff.
I interviewed Sully on the podcast because we worked on Guardians. You had a bigger
Michael has a podcast called Inside of You. So on this podcast,
you've been on that,
I've been on that.
We're going to talk about podcasts. Ones. This is the podcast about podcasts.
I had you on the show.
Yeah, you had me on the show, and we had a good conversation.
I loved him. I just felt like he's so
not.
Well, he would start texting me like, "I'm grateful for this today." I do this thing where we text each other what we're grateful for.
I'm grateful for this.
And I'm like, you know, that is so sweet. You're a sweet man. I need to start doing things like this. And it just, so I go, this guy is, I like to hang with people who are going to make me a better person. I just want to be a better person. I think that's the goal with
while
it.
While in the process, dragging them down.
Yes. Into the world of podcasting.
Yes.
Infecting them with negativity so that.
Yeah, well, inside of you, my girls, was therapeutic, and I just was like getting inside. But this became like, let's do something, and you can talk more about this, but that's positive. That's what we're in love with. We're, you know, like his wife's coming on. My ex-girlfriend was on. We have couples like you and Lydia on, and we just talk about all these different things and dynamics and how it works and how it doesn't work. And what, you know,
we're bombarded constantly with sarcasm, negativity, cynicism. Even just on our phones. Yesterday, I found myself doing it. You know, I got off social media a while ago, but I've just moved, and I got on this app called Nextdoor.
Mm-hmm. Your neighborhood app.
Your neighborhood app. It's social media.
Of course, it is,
and it's horrifying. Horrifying the way, never mind strangers on the internet, like
these are people
neighbors
who live in your neighborhood.
And the way that they talk to each other and it just, it's fear mongering and all these things. And so it's just one of the many ways that like all of these things are kind of, they're insidious and they kind of find their ways into your Twitter feed or into your Instagram or into your whatever it is, whatever you're watching. And so we decided to kind of subvert that for ourselves and, you know, once a week, twice a week, sit down with people and figure out how they do the same.
Yeah. Well, but also because you've been married for a long time.
Yeah.
And Michael is
perpetually single.
Perpetually single. And also, so you have these
two perspectives.
You have these two complementary perspectives of, you know, you're in a relationship, you've been in a long term relationship, you've been in love a long time, and you're sort of navigating the, you know, how do you find love? How do you retain? Like, how do you how do you make it work?
Arrested Development, some people call it.
Kind of. Yeah. But, you know, but it was, but Lydia and I had so much fun coming on because I don't think we've ever really done anything like that before where we talked about how we met and also just like our day, because Lydia is like the fucking best person I know, and I'm so endlessly in love with her, and it's so fun. I don't know, it's just really fun to
hear
come
her perspective,
on
like when
with her. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And that's the other thing. Like the people in our lives, Michael and I's lives, who are positive people, who seem to be on some kind of positive path. There's always someone in their life who they are connected with who helps them do that, whether it's Lydia or, you know, we interviewed Chrissy Metz and it's her best friend. And so when that opportunity comes up, we also want to include that person because that's a rare thing in this industry. You know, most people be like, we want to interview Chris. It doesn't matter who he's married to or the industry kind of wants to separate us from our private life. And it's just, it's an important part.
The machine is dehuman. The machine is dehumanizing. Yeah. It's innately dehumanizing because at the end of the day, it's about clicks. It's about, you know, sound bites. Yeah. It's not really interested in, you know, like deep emotions or how people interact with one another. And, you know, Lydia is just one of those people who is a beam of sunshine. And she, what I love about her is that she and I have different senses of humor, but hers, she tolerates my endless stupid jokes. And she's such a great, like, the way that she plays off it, it just makes me really happy. It was just fun. It was just fun to kind of come on and we hadn't really even talked about a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. What was cool is, like, if I have you on the podcast or I have you, it's like, okay, is it hard being married when you're – so I'm hearing your perspective. But when she's on there and I watch the both of you and I'm like, sorry for hitting you, Chris or Sean.
He just threw an elbow.
But, you know, I say, you know, when she's away or you're working or all these things are happening – how do you deal with it?
Yeah.
And looking at you, watching you two look at each other and kind of go, well, and kind of navigate, like, all right, you want to talk about this? Or you? And here, it's almost like you're hearing it for the first time in a way.
Well, what's interesting is that I feel like there are a lot of couples that they'll get together or they're together and there's something that might be a little bit of a hesitation about, you know, well, we're really in it for the long haul, you know? And I think part of making a long-term relationship work is just, you know, like, no matter what, we're in it. I'm in it, you know, we're in it, you know, like sometimes they're going to be easy. Sometimes they're going to be hard.
Right. But it makes all those times safe.
You never have to worry that I'm not going to be here at the end of the day. And that's how I feel with her. And that's how I hope I'm able to make her feel too, that there's, you know, like this is it kind of a thing.
Right.
But sometimes it just, I don't know. It's so easy to get caught up in our own world. It's so easy to get caught up in our own dumb garbage, our meaningless ego shit.
You can walk parallel lives.
Yeah.
You can be right next to each other and lonely.
Right.
You can be, you know, in the same room and miles apart, like all of those things. Rachel and I have had the same type of experiences, and we've made, like, you have to make a conscious effort to bring those two lives back together.
It is about making the efforts. And I think when we're young, we get these romantic cinematic ideas of relationships. Like, and then, you know, at the end of Pretty Woman, they drive off in the limo and he's saying tally ho and she gets in the car. You know, cut to like 3 to 6 months later.
Yeah.
Not every day is going to be someone in a limo. You know what I mean? It's like there's still day to day stuff, and it's easy to get caught up in your own lives. It's easy to feel like, okay, this relationship is just set on autopilot. You have to make those conscious efforts to not be on autopilot, and you have to make conscious efforts to re-engage and together plan time to be a couple, plan time to go away, plan time to talk, plan time to just fucking look each other in the eye at the end of a day and have real moments. I mean, I am it's, you know, and she's really good about, like, all right, you know, we're hanging out, like, put the laptop down. Oh my God, I'm sorry. I didn't even realize I was fucking doing it, you know?
And that's In Love with Michael Rosenbaum and Chris Sullivan on Apple Podcasts and other
Mondays. So, where I'm on. Have you learned anything?
Oh my God. That's the one thing, is we call each other on bullshit. We're like, you know, the whole purpose is to be honest and open and be like, you know, I'm kind of like lost and I'm finding myself. I told you this, and I don't know if you know, but I went to a wellness center for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And it was like just life changing. It really was. I felt like I grew up finally, a little bit anyway.
Yeah.
And I felt safe for the first time. I went off to Connecticut and I stayed at this, and I just felt safe, and I was emotional, and I was finding myself, and these therapists really worked with me to sort of just, because you do get caught up with your own shit, and you realize, God, that's not the important shit.
No,
it's part of you, and you need to have a career, have a life. But the real part is connecting and like being charitable and giving and loving and all these things. And so it has forced me, like, there's no other way. Like, I am real, not that I'm not charitable, but I'm just opening myself up. I'm very vulnerable right now. I won't cry, but
okay.
No, but
we'll get you there. Hold on, we'll get you there. Give me a second.
But I think, you know, you always joke on the show that we're going to get you married by the end of the show, or we're going to get, I mean, look, I'm looking for love, obviously in all the wrong places, but not necessarily. I've had some great women in my life that have gotten away because I was too immature, or I just wasn't ready, or, you know, and now I'm just allowing myself to just, like, hear Chris, hear you and Lydia talking. It gives me, it encourages me to want to find somebody that really cares about me, that will always be there, that
can
just light me for me, which I'm having a tough time understanding if that's possible.
Well, that could be part of your problem, because you have to like you for you. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm doing, man.
Yeah.
Self-love. Real quick story. I will tell you, at one of the, at the wellness center, one of the therapists said, what do you do in the morning? I go, I wake up with anxiety. She goes, okay. And what do you do? I go, well, what else do? I lie there. She goes, I want you to get the fuck up. I want you to get up and drink some water, go in the bathroom, take a piss. She didn't say it like all like so
sure.
vulgar. Yeah. And she goes, look in the mirror. There's nobody there. Just say I love you. I go, God, this is so cheesy. She goes, no, I want you to do that. You're going to learn to love yourself. We're all flawed. We all have made mistakes. We've all done whatever. You have to learn to love yourself. And so I was like, okay. And then I would go and meditate. But like, it was in the beginning, I would look in the mirror at like 7 in the morning and go,
Love you, dude.
Like, I was too cool even by myself.
You're doing a bit
like,
out of
it. Like, I was too cool to be real with myself. It was like, and by the end, I started going, dude, it's okay. So finally, by week two, I was looking at myself going, you're a good dude, man. No, you're a good dude. You mean well. You help people. You're a loving guy. You deserve the best. I love you. That's it. I love you, man. And then I would go and meditate. And today's 55 days straight of meditating.
That's incredible.
I am working so hard to just be like a better human being. I think that, again, that's what the show is. But like, you're right. Loving yourself is what I think. You can't love anyone else unless you love yourself.
The industry that the three of us have sunken ourselves into would like us to continue to romanticize the industry itself, mm-hmm. the machine itself, like you were talking about. And in order to do that, there's a great amount of navel gazing. There's a great amount of like self-promotion involved. It is a necessary part of our business to advertise the things we are doing, to promote ourselves, to go on promotional tours, to do press.
Yeah, it's very me. Because that's the stuff that you seem to have to do to be able to do more of the thing that you want to do.
Right, and if you're not mindful about all of the things surrounding that, it'll just run away with your life.
Yeah,
it will run away with your life, and you turn around one day and you realize that you've gotten way off track. And when I say you, I mean me.
It's not
proverbial you.
It's not a surprise that, you know, especially when you meet. I'm always fascinated by kids who are child actors who turn out like super cool and okay.
Yeah.
And it seems like in pretty much every case, the ones who turn out great had a really great, solid family and a grounded personal life.
Yep. Yeah.
And the ones that spin out of control have not that.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying it's the answer to everything, but it's not surprising that when you see people who seem to kind of, it's like, well, they have a connection to something that's real, mm-hmm. that's keeping them, you know, tethered from all this other garbage that's, you know, all the kind of alluring ego pursuits that can
it all starts, I think, definitely, without a doubt, your developmental stages. Like, you know, if you don't have a parent who just says, I love you.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
I care about you. Those simple things
mm-hmm.
are vital. And I don't remember hearing, you know, certain things. Like, I just didn't. I didn't get certain things, and maybe they weren't capable. And I forgive them. There's all that. But, you know, those things, if you don't have them, you search for them and you try to get them through approval and self-esteem, things that lift your self-esteem up.
Right.
Things, and those things can be really scary. Those things are like equivalent. Approval and all that is equivalent to like self-worth. I mean, the taste of it.
The ego is basically a drug. Mm-hmm. Those ego shots are like drugs. And because it'll give you the rush of whatever acceptance or significance or whatever sort of thing, but then it vanishes really fast.
Right.
And then it's like more.
Then you just
more.
Want that hit.
And then, but the sort of the lasting love and the lasting stuff, I don't want to say it doesn't feel. I don't want to say it this way. I don't want to say like it doesn't feel like anything, but it just doesn't feel like, oh God, I just can't get enough of you. Like, it doesn't feel unhealthy. It just feels, to me, it feels peaceful and it feels mm-hmm. safe and it feels calm and it doesn't feel like doing anything. It just feels like we are being in love rather than, mm-hmm. you know, like, oh, we gotta do.
Pretending.
Yeah,
Forcing yourself to like, yeah, almost like. You're looking on the outside in, like, look, we're bowling together. Look at us. We're at Jerry's Deli.
There is. Nothing says love.
I'm trying to figure out. We're going to watch trailers and then
we're
fall
so
asleep.
Happy. Look at us.
By the way, I wonder if some of your anxiety has affected you drinking these Red Bull energy drinks.
Well,
I
mean, first of all, let me explain.
Okay.
This is 3/4 full. I just took a couple of sips.
Oh, got it. Just a little
I
shit.
Will not drink that whole thing. I don't want.
I remember when I first.
This podcast not brought to you.
Yeah, not
Red
brought
Bull.
To you.
Yeah. Red Bull gives you wings and anxiety. I just can't, like, I can drink trace amounts of caffeine, but I remember, you know, my first panic attacks came in college. I didn't really know what they were. There wasn't really much of an internet at the time. And then I kind of realized what they were. Like, someone told me what they were, and that helped a lot for a while. And then in, like, 99, 2000, I started getting them, like, real bad, like having to pull the car over. Mm-hmm. And then one day I was like, well, that's odd. I seem to be getting this feeling every time I drink a coffee. I wonder if there's a connection. So I go on to, you know, WebCrawler or whatever, like, AltaVista, whatever the search tool was at the time before we all used Google. And I was like, anxiety, panic attacks and caffeine. And like 20,000 pages come up like, oh my God, of course. Yes. When you fire adrenaline through your body, your heart's going to beat faster and you're going to get panic attacks. Yep. Why didn't I, you know.
I remember my annual panic attacks.
In the car.
Lovingly. Yeah. Yeah, the growing up, or not growing up, but in college, I would have like one a year, and I would just tell, I would tell my friends, and I was like, I don't really cry, you know, except for like once a year, and then I cry all at once,
right?
And it's, and it just feels good, like it's
a microburst.
And I'm like, you do that, right? That's how everybody handles.
You just cry at once,
all at once,
just like, in one moment
for like 90 minutes.
You know how you punch a hole in the wall and then put your head in there and cry into it, and then you seal the wall back up.
Yeah, yeah, you spackle around it. Till the air runs out.
I watch Yentl once every September, and boy, do I get it all!
And it really gives me a panic attack.
Wow,
but no, yeah, we talked about that when I visited your podcast about how I had
animated your panic attack.
I went. The one that like made me change the way I dealt with caffeine and anxiety and all these things sent me to the ER.
Oh my God!
Sent me to the ER. It was incredible. It was an incredible story. There was. So many characters along, like the doctor at the urgent care had this weird kind of up inflection at the end.
Think you might have a panic attack?
He goes, well, it wasn't a heart attack,
Jim Gaffigan.
But he goes, but maybe we should send you to the hospital. What do you think?
What do I think?
I guess, sure. And
I guess with my no medical training,
it ended up being a simple migraine variant that made the whole right side of my body go white noise.
Well, that's understandably upsetting.
So I thought I was having a heart attack, but later I ended up at some hospital in Culver City, and this nurse who didn't speak hardly any English, who when she was checking me in, turned around from the whiteboard and said, "Welcome to my world." and I was like, she said, "That you go poo poo?" And I said, "I'm sorry, what? You go poo poo?
Did you go poo poo?"
I did.
Good for you.
Thank God.
Did you save it for them or did you?
No, oh, okay. It was just she wanted to know if you were poo poo. I mean, the whole situation began to get scary, and then finally Rachel, I'm like, "Rachel, just go home and then I'll figure this out in the morning." I tried to go to sleep. Middle of the night, some screaming patient, because I didn't realize I had a shared room, came in, and they went out. And then someone came in to clean the room in the middle of the night because they didn't realize I was there.
I mean, it sounds like a horror movie that should only be 82 to 94 minutes. You think you're checking into a hospital for a heart attack, but it turns out you might be having a psychotic
part break. Of a psychological experiment.
You might be dying somewhere. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Well, I ADA'd myself in the middle of the night. I took all my leads off, walked out to the nurse's station. I was like, I'd like to go home.
Mm-hmm.
And the nurse was like, "Don't you think you should stay?" And I'm like, "Take this IV out of my arm. I'm leaving."
Yeah.
And when you ADA yourself, they have to escort you out of the building.
Mm-hmm.
So this nurse escorted me to the curb. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm standing on the curb with a little bag. She's standing back up the stairs in the doorway going, "You smoke?" And I turn around, "What? You smoke?" "No." "Okay, good. You drink?" "No." And then there's this silence. I'm waiting for an Uber driver. And she goes, "Don't go. I love you."
What?
I am not kidding you.
You might have died.
I might have died.
What?
This might all be. This might all be.
She's like, "Don't go. I love you."
I don't even know what's going on.
I'm never going back to Culver City.
It might be some kind of strange, like horror movie aversion therapy.
The point is, anxiety attacks are real.
They're real. The hospital that he went to was not. This was clearly a shelter island.
Don't drink coffee after 2 p.m.
I had it, but lucky for you, I had an anxiety attack on the last show that I did, and I was exhausted. I was in every scene, and I just remember being it's a serious finale, the big scene, and they're all right, we're rolling, and it hits me, and I'm like, thank God I knew my lines inside out, where I could, I was sort of faking it, but I'm like, they see the panic in my eyes. I'm like, I'm gonna pass out. I don't know how I'm gonna get through this. And I go, hey, you know what, guys, I gotta go to the bathroom. And sometimes they say, or a lot of times, I think they say that you're not supposed to. You're supposed to stay there, because if you leave, then anytime you have another panic attack, you're always thinking, oh, I have to do. There's some psychology to it.
Oh, interesting.
But like, you should fight it. You should just be there and just breathe and get through it. But I couldn't. I go, I have to. I was trying to be funny. I was like, I got to take a crap.
Mm-hmm.
Got to take a crap. Rosie, can this wait till after this take? And I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I really got to crap.
You start so crying.
Finally go,
I'm pooping.
Dude, so finally they said, all right, just go ahead. We had a couple more things to work out. And I ran to my trailer. And I ran in it, and it was like I was a drug addict. I was ripping through my bag and looking in zippers for a Xanax anywhere, like going through my jackets and my costume. And I'm getting goosebumps thinking about this shit. And I was just like, and finally I grabbed it and I took a quarter, and I waited like 5-10 minutes, knock on my door. I was getting anxiety more than knocking on my door. I'm like, hey, I just need, I'm still in the bathroom, still taking that crap, man. And I was like terrified, and it wouldn't kick in, so I took another half.
Oh no.
And I was like, oh my God, it's not working. And by the time, I mean, I'm telling you, when you have a full on panic attack, you know, exhaustion. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, because your body's in complete fight or flight, and you're being flooded with fear chemicals. And you don't know if you should run or stay there, or
I won't watch. I never have watched that final scene,
or rip your skin off your body,
because I knew I would notice.
But no one else would have.
No, but it was not my best performance. In my eyes, I was just like, I was going through the motions. I was a robot. I wasn't feeling anything. I was just getting through the fucking scene. Yeah. It was terrifying.
But I'm sure your skills as an actor.
Yeah, fine. But I'm just saying, I didn't like the feeling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting is I've had panic. Well, I don't know if this is interesting at all, but I've had panic attacks. Like, if I feel anxious or panicky before I do stand up, and something about performing makes it completely go away.
I'm the same.
And I don't know if it's because I'm getting out of my head, or my body is flooding itself with different chemicals, or I'm not focused on me anymore. I'm focused on the show. I don't know, but it just like it immediately cures it.
What is it exactly you're thinking of when you say that? You're thinking of the show. You're thinking of your performance.
No, when I get up on stage.
Oh, right when you get up on stage, you have this panic.
Performing is like Adderall.
Performing, I guess so.
Yeah, for me too. It's like it makes it like totally go away. Me. Yeah.
Whereas I would think like, oh, wouldn't you be more anxious in front of people? And it turns out. No, I actually get more comfortable, and I think because maybe it's because I'm part of the anxiety corkscrew into darkness is that it just kind of feeds on itself, and then you just, you know, you just rabbit hole down. It just gets worse and worse and worse. But when you're engaged in things where you can't be in your own head, then you can't do it. It's sort of like it takes the oxygen out of it a little bit.
But it's also learning how to fail.
Well,
like
because
being okay with failing.
Yes, but your brain tells you I should run away and go dive under my bed. But for me, what actually works is the opposite, which is actually weirdly being. And I'm not saying this would work for everybody, but being around people or doing a show or
staying connected.
Staying connected.
Yeah,
yeah. Staying connected is incredibly helpful. Yeah,
I think that's the instinct. Obviously, that flight instinct can be detrimental, right? Because we all three of us and have had the same reaction. But the thing that seems to help us is to talk about it, or to ask for help, or to connect with somebody else about it. Because one of the things when it was happening to me, I thought I was dying. I thought if I make a big deal about this and I'm not dying, well then shame comes in, and now I'm hysterical or inconveniencing other people.
Something's wrong with Chris.
Yeah, and the idea of you know, the stigma around mental illness or any of those things, especially nowadays, makes it hard to talk about.
Well, also the stigma around dudes talking about their feelings. And I feel like it's a lot less of a stigma than it used to be.
Absolutely.
You know, but I was trying to think about how I tried to write a bit about this and it didn't work. I tried it on stage once and it worked. It so didn't work that I was like, oh, I don't think there's... Sometimes a bit you can kind of tell, like, oh, there's a little something here. But the idea was essentially that it's that moment when two dudes hang out, when you say goodbye. Dudes don't know what to do. No matter how...
You're calm, oh my gosh.
No matter how, like, chill or casual, oh my God, we had the best time. There's always that... I guess I'll, you know, it's that moment where you're like, so I always kind of like, yeah. I was trying to, like, the tag I was trying for the bit was like, it'd be cool if dudes could just kiss goodnight. You're just like, you know what I mean? Because it would be like, oh, hey, man, good to
you're
see
you. You're so right.
It's like dudes don't know how to hug. They, like, they kind of create the space or they embrace or they, like, you know.
Hardwick, this is, you're right. Here's what happens. We'll be in this engaging conversation. I just, when you're saying this, it's, I'm dying inside because I'm like, you know, you're hanging out, like Sylvie and I are hanging out, we're doing our show, we're doing that, we're laughing, we're going, hey, buddy, yeah. All right, and you and I, we're at Gunn's house, and we're talking, we're having a great chat, and like, all of us, even James, I noticed, does it. Like, James has a thing where, like, we have this really nice conversation, and then I go, all right, dude, all right.
And you, there's just like a weird moment, there's like a weird vacuum.
What do you do?
The air gets sucked out for a second, it's like, I don't know how to close this, do we... hug or kiss or say, like, how do we walk away? And it's the disengage. And I think we're just, you know, so a lot of times not, maybe it's just our generation, not necessarily conditioned to share, talk about our feelings, be vulnerable. I don't know what it is, but I just wish people would be more, maybe we just need to come up with a word or something.
Yeah. Let's you know? Why don't we just imagine what it would be like if we just took the time. Hang on.
What if we just yelled, you're special to me?
You're special!
Don't go, I love you.
Chris, all right, buddy, you're special to me.
You're special to me.
There's this funny
thing. Don't go, I love
this
you.
This might not be funny, but SCTV.
Oh, my God, yes, of course.
Hilarious. And there, what's his name? Who is? Oh, no, there's two women.
Andrea Martin.
Probably, yes. And they're
Catherine O'Hara.
There's a scene where they're both shopping. And they're shopping all day, and they come back, and they go, oh, my God, that was so much fun. Oh, my God, it was just a blast. I had so much fun with you today. Oh, my God. And they go on and on. And one of them says, you know, we should do this tomorrow. And the girl goes, oh, my son's coming in town. And there's a long beat, and she says uncomfortably, am I your son? It's just so stupid. I die, but it was so uncomfortable. But that's kind of what it's like saying goodbye to a dude. Am I your son? Okay, well, I'm going to go
now. Because there's you're like, is something supposed to happen?
Yeah.
How do we disconnect?
Should we schedule something to happen next?
Yeah, how do we say goodbye? Like, it's just that dudes don't know how to say goodbye to each other because when you're hanging out with a dude, it's a date. You're on a man date, basically. Yeah. You're connecting. So how do you... You know, how do you disengage from that? And I'm not 100%, you know, I was just going for the hug. Yeah. I think it's okay to say, like, hey, man, I love you. It's good to see you, you know?
Well, here's what's funny.
We throw out the love you, buddy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Love you, buddy.
Love you, bud. Always.
Have you ever thrown it out to someone who's not expecting it?
Oh, my dad. I mean, he's like, all right, talk to you later.
You're special to me.
Whoa, take it easy, buddy. Come on now. Oh, take it easy. God. What are we...
Don't get all funny. Right.
Well, you know what happened? This happened at the Wellness Center, too. She goes, you know, I want you to start embracing discomfort. I want you to embrace being uncomfortable. I want you to... When someone says something to you like, you're good, or I love... You turn off. You don't, it's like you don't believe it. And I'm like, yeah, there's probably truth to that. So when someone says, you're great, you go, oh, yeah, thanks, you too. And I kind of just get out of the moment. She goes, I want you, it's not like you have to do this all the time, because that would be pretty weird if, like, at the end of this interview, Hardwick, you're like, all right, dude, and you're like, hey, man, I want to thank, you know, and it just gets real weird. Then it's weird. But she goes, I want you to embrace it. And funny enough, that night, my grandma FaceTimes me. And we're talking, and I'm, you know, she had just put my grandfather in a memory facility. We're all brokenhearted over it. And she goes, what are you doing? I go, oh, yeah, I'm at this place. I wouldn't want to tell her what I'm doing.
She don't want her to worry.
What? And finally, she's like, well, what is it? What is this place? And I go, you know, I'm just getting my mind, making my mind better. She goes, what's wrong with your mind? And I go, nothing. I'm just, she goes, I want to tell you something. You're very special to me. And I go, I love you. I'm going to give you a call tomorrow. She goes, no, stop, listen to me for a second.
you're a remarkable boy. I go, all right, look, I love you to death. I'm going to go, she goes, no, no, stop it.
She was forcing you to take the moment.
After I got that advice, which was weird. And she goes, I'm 91 years old. I have seen a lot of remarkable people in my life. Family. But you are the most remarkable boy I've ever known. And dude, I turned the fucking phone and bawled. Like, going, oh my God. And then I was like, you know what? Fuck it. This is the moment. I'm trying to change. Yeah. And I went, fuck it. And I just looked at the camera and I go, look what you're making me do. And I tried. She goes, well, you should know these things. I love you. And it was just this
what
moment.
What if she was like, man, you know, now I'm a little turned off by this exchange. I didn't realize it was going to, you need to, I'm uncomfortable now.
Oh my God. That would have buried me. Can you imagine my grandmother just says, oh, this is weird.
Jesus, oh, Michael.
I didn't realize. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Okay.
I'm getting
you?
another call.
I gotta go.
It's my other remarkable grandson. My more remarkable grandson.
But that's the thing. Like, so if you decide to work on something, you're not just going to be granted the ability to do that. You're going to be presented with situations where you have to practice that shit. Like, if you want to practice patience, you're going to find yourself in traffic. You know what I mean? If you want to practice these things, it's no surprise.
But every situation has 9 or 10 lessons.
Right.
Depending on how you want. I mean, it is because that same traffic situation could, you know, it could teach you patience. Mm-hmm. It could teach you resourcefulness to get out of traffic. It could teach you how to, you know, take time that you have to be alone with yourself to be more creative. Like, there are so many different ways.
Right.
And I think it's just about being able to see all the different possibilities, because I think so often we expect to be led around by life, or we expect for, you know, to get hit in the face with whatever we're supposed to see or do. And sometimes it's like, you have to look for it, and you have to create those situations for yourself, and you have to actively pursue the, you know, like all the possibilities and perspectives mm-hmm. without expecting them to happen at you.
Right. How do you guys, this is something I want to know.
Yeah.
How do you guys deal with, I don't know if you feel it anymore, because it seems like, I mean, maybe you do. I don't know if you, well, I'll just ask. So you ever, like, get that, just that feeling like you're overwhelmed for it, that moment sure. where you're like, you could feel it. It goes over your body. It's that numbness. It's like, it's overwhelming. Do you take a step back, or do you just go with that feeling, and you just go, let's breathe, let's take a step back, let's sit down for a second, let's meditate, we're fine. Or you just ignore it?
Well, I think it depends. I don't know if there's one answer for every time. I think sometimes, I mean, the more it happens, the more you know that it's just a thing. You can boil it down to just being a physiological response. So you might, as Chris Sullivan said the last time he was on the podcast, you might ask yourself, have I been drinking water? Have I eaten? Am I going through a particularly stressful time? Like, there's a lot of conditional elements that you need to look at to see if it's the result of things that can be easily remedied by either getting your blood sugar up or hydrating or whatever it is. Or, you know, if you feel like you're in full panic, it's getting the tools to, number one, take a deep breath and slow your breathing down,
mm-hmm.
knowing that if you can change your body's physiology, mm-hmm. that will have an effect on your mind as well. Might be calling someone. It might be crying. It might be getting it out. Like, so I think it depends on the kind of overwhelm, but no matter what, it is having the faith to know
it will go away.
It will go away. That it has never lasted forever, nor will it last forever, nor will it kill you. And just knowing, like, this is a thing that happens sometimes.
Right. What works for me too? Sometimes some great advice to me was, Michael, when's the last time you had a physical? And I go, well, I had a physical right before I came here. We did blood work. Okay, did they check your heart? And I go, yeah. Oh, yeah, I had a, you know, they checked my heart inside out, my lungs, everything's really good. They're like, okay, so next time you have anxiety or overwhelmed, I want you to first think, I'm really healthy.
Right.
I'm a healthy person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not having a heart attack. I'm not having these things. I know what this is. To know that you're actually innately, everything's working the way it should, and that this is anxiety or whatever this is, there's something reassuring or comfortable about just letting yourself know, like, hey, this is okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like,
They even said something like, name this anxiety. Name your anxiety. Mm-hmm. Call it something. So I called it Mosley, this kid who picked on me in eighth grade. And I was like, Mosley, get in the fucking back seat, Mosley. Yep. You know?
Yeah,
but,
when I quit drinking a couple years ago, I finally started having feelings, or at least being able to identify feelings.
Yeah.
And that's like the game now, right? So stuff pops up, and my game that I play with myself is to identify the feeling as quickly as possible and to call it out, to say it out loud to someone. Like,
give me an example.
Like the other day, Rachel and I were getting ready for an event. No big deal. Wasn't a big event, but I was in a place of panic. And I was trying to get one of my shirt sleeve buttons cuffed, and I thought I was going to put my fist through a wall. I couldn't get it. And finally, I just turned to Rachel and I said, Rachel, I'm panicking. I'm about to lose my mind, and I need you to button this button. And this has become like the interaction now that I'm able to call out my emotions, and she can check in with me and be like, okay, What can I do to help you? And I can call out a couple of things. She's able to help me with those things. And always coming back to my breath, right? So your meditation practice, like always coming back to my breath. A teacher taught me a long time ago. They said, we all know that the brain can only have one thought at a time.
One thought at a time.
And a deep breath is an unnatural act. That's why it's a cliche. Take a deep breath, because if you are taking a deep breath, you are focusing on breathing. You don't breathe deeply all the time.
And you cannot simultaneously relax and have a panic attack.
Exactly. And so coming back to my breath has been like it seems so simple. It seems so simple. But I went and it was one of the things, we haven't talked about this actually. I went about a year ago and did an ayahuasca ceremony. And it was
save
like...
Save this for the podcast. Let's not give this away on Hardwick's show. I don't want to give him that.
No, Chris, you're a guest. You can
Chris, but you're a guest.
But it was the number one lesson from that night was that everything is fine if I come back to my breath. Mm-hmm. Nothing can go wrong if I come back to my breath. And it was this kind of meditation overarching of the evening. And that's...
I thought you were going to say when you call it out, like in the middle of nowhere, you're just in the middle of a bunch of people. You're like, murder! Kill someone! God, that felt so good.
Oh, wow. I used my breath to protect.
I've done it on set before at Video Village, sitting in chairs. God, I am feeling a lot of anxiety right now. And just say it to
you
like...
You said that. People are like, okay,
to the
Chris,
people
can we get you
people
a
around me. And they're like...
Frosty? Or?
And one time I said it, and Chris, he was like, me too. What's going on today? What that's different here? And we just got into a conversation about it, and in about 3 minutes,
it was all gone.
No, I said anxiety. That to my assistant. I went downstairs one time. This was right before I went to the wellness center. I said, I walked downstairs, and it was just a morning like any other morning. Mm-hmm. And I walked in, and she goes, morning. I go, good morning. And I looked in, and I go, I think I'm depressed. She goes, okay, do you want me to call Dr. Krausman? I go, no, I'm going to think about what to do, but I'm going to be okay. I just wanted to say it. She goes, okay, if I could do anything, I'll be.
And then she quit.
Was that her walking down the stairs? Was that her voice getting further and further away?
Oh, my God.
Well, I one of the things that Lydia and I are able to do with each other is, you know, if one of us is feeling anxious, is sort of remind the other person circumstantially what might be going on. And Lydia's so sweet and adorable because if she's feeling extra anxious about something, I'll go, well, you know, is it possible it's because you had an audition today that you were really stressed about, so you haven't really slept for the last 2 days because you've been worrying about all the other things you have to do, so you haven't been sleeping, you haven't been able to exercise, and you haven't been eating well. And, you know, like, and so you're not nourishing your body. So is it because of all these circumstances? And then she'll just pause and go, no, I don't think that's it at all. And it's just sort of like, that's the sort of the way that you can with your
back
partner
to each other. Yeah.
Just sort of, you know, like be a helpful sounding board. Right. And she does that way more with me too, but it's still having those moments where someone else that you love and trust can say, like, whatever you, even though you feel like this is the realest thing you've ever experienced, here's some other things that are going on that might have put you in a vulnerable state. I'm not saying it's not happening. I'm not discounting your feelings. I'm just saying here are some things that might be contributing to it that might help you realize that it might not be as real as you feel like it is right now.
Yeah.
Even just sort of having that conversation and being
I said something to you. I said, I go, how you doing? I go, you got to be overwhelmed now. You're nominated for an Emmy. You got all this press. You're doing the show. You're doing the podcast. You're doing all these things. He's like, yeah, dude, I'm like, you know, there was a moment where you were just definitely like amped up. And I go, hey, I go, have you been meditating? And you just go, no. No, I should probably do that.
Yeah.
But it's just a little thing.
Well, because that's how easy things, these habits, if they're not, if you don't do them every single day and get them ingrained, they slip away. They just slide away.
The good news, though, is because sometimes people can become very all or nothing. And when they fall off the wagon on something, they're just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
You know, fuck it forever. And it's like, you know what? Even if you fall off the meditation wagon for a month or 2 months or whatever, you can start it right back up again. Like, it's just always right there.
And I think I am, after all my therapy and all these things, and one of the core issues is that I'm addicted to anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
I'm addicted to the feeling of anxiety.
It's something to manage. It's something to deal with.
It makes me feel important. It makes me feel exhilarated.
And it's also
it
part
makes
of
me
your
feel
ritual.
It's also part of my ritual. If I'm not feeling anxiety, then I must not be busy enough, or I must not be trying hard enough.
Right.
Or
I don't know how you like. I just saw that video on Instagram of your band, the wife, the spouse,
Joseph the spouse.
I should always fuck that name because it's a hard name, but it's a great name. But like, I saw you, and I'm like, because I've seen you live. If you haven't seen him live, holy shit! I'm like. And I think of you, I'm like, God, I look at your performance and This Is Us and all the movies and shows and then this. I'm like, how does this guy even have anxiety? He's so confident up there. I am shitting my pants when I'm doing certain things. And I'm looking at you and I'm like, God, it makes me feel better knowing that even you get anxiety. Even you've had anxiety.
Well, of course, because you know, there's the anxiety that comes from bad things. There's the anxiety that comes from invented things. And there's the anxiety that comes from... for lack of a better term, good things.
New things.
Yeah. Like, more things are things, whether they're good or bad, whether it's being nominated for an Emmy or whether it's, like, someone hit my car, whether it's someone that you care about who's sick in the hospital. Like, it all is more... Like, the more things that you have to process and deal with, the more it piles on. And I had dinner with a friend of mine the other night who's... he's a showrunner and a producer, and he's doing really well. And he said something that was so... insightful to me, which was, a couple years ago I had the opportunity to like build my empire. And he said, when I really took a step back and looked at it, he was like, I don't want that. Because I really just love being on a show. Like, I love focusing on one thing for a handful of years and just getting as far into that thing as possible. And I just didn't think it would be healthy for me or my family to take on. And I thought, that is insane in a good way that he had the perspective. When our business and our egos condition us that bigger is always better and more is always better, that he somehow was like,
that's mature.
It is, because smart. At a certain point, it's like, how much do you need? How much money? How much stuff? How many things? How much attention? You know, because there are diminishing returns at a certain point, and then it's not going to fill the emptiness. Well, you have to do that.
It's like Parsons from Big Bang Theory. And, I was talking to Sean Astin, Goonies and everything,
great
guy.
Yeah.
And we were just talking, and he was like, there was a conversation in the car, and I was like, he walked away from it. He wanted to step down because, he was making $1 million an episode. And when he turned it down, that means that the rest of them who wanted to do it, couldn't do it now. So, I'm like, what do you mean? So he didn't want to do it. So if he bails out, because he's, obviously it's an ensemble, but he's got, he says all of the, anyway. So I just felt like the conversation was he left because he wanted to leave for some reason, whatever it was, personal, because your story made me think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the people in the car were saying, well, but all those other people, they had to walk away from all that money because he didn't want to stick around.
Yeah.
So what a burden that is, or like to know that
all these people will not be working if you.
Yeah.
But my point of this whole boring story, what I'm saying, is that it's not his responsibility to be in charge of their destiny or
Well, also, to be fair, they also made a shit ton of money.
That's what I said. They're a million billionaires, but it's not like, you know, the crew's going, they're not going to work. They've been working. It's at some point you have to say, hey, for whatever personal reasons, I've decided this, and you can't worry about what everybody else thinks and, oh my God, just do it another 2 years and we'll make more money. There comes a point where it's like, you have to respect someone's decision.
Well, you really have to do things that are healthy for you. And you really have to do things that, and sometimes that does mean stepping away from things that it seems like, wow, this is crazy. Why wouldn't you want all that? You know, like, why wouldn't this producer want, you know, like a Bad Robot style empire?
Right.
It's like, well, probably because you'd never sleep if you're the type of person that obsesses on every detail, which is part of how people build these types of things.
You're going to kill yourself.
You'll have an early heart attack, you'll have a stroke, you'll make everyone around you miserable, you won't be happy, you won't. You'll build it, but you certainly won't enjoy it. It doesn't matter how much money you're making, because you won't be able to enjoy it, because you'll just be obsessed with the, you know, and for someone to recognize that about themselves and just say, like, you know what? That's not where happiness lies. Happiness lies in the being comfortable with yourself, being happy with who you are, having a, you know, good friend connections around you, having a partner you love and respect, having, like, that's where the meat of life is. And not to say that, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, we're all talking from very privileged places. We have, you know, we have the money that we need to live and survive, and that's, and a lot of people don't even have that.
Right.
And so but it's just in kind of reminding people, like, more things aren't going to fix you. More of anything isn't going to make your life.
Material things are not going to.
No, it's really the people and the, you know, it is that fucking It's a Wonderful Life, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's all the
people. Well, I left, you know, I've talked to you about this, but I left Smallville at the end of season 7. And everybody's like, why'd you leave? I go, well, my deal was for 6 years and I did 7.
Yeah.
And they offered me 3 more to finish the series, and I just thought the story was told, and I just wanted to do other things. I couldn't do it anymore. I just couldn't do that anymore for 7 years, 10 months a year. And for me, it was just a personal health kind of, you know, I was having back issues and stuff. And I was just like, my health is more important. It's just more important. I can make a living and I can get by, and I'm just going to do this. And I remember the president of Warner Brothers sat with me. Well, let's just say a higher executive.
Bugs Bunny.
Bugs Bunny.
It was the Bugs Bunny.
He said, you know,
hey, Doc, why didn't you?
He goes, before you do this, I want you to think of Margulies' career and what happened to her.
What?
That's what he said to me on my deathbed. May I drop dead? He said, before you turn down these last 3 years, I want you to just remember what happened to Juliette Margulies, her career. Of course, then.
Oh, Juliana Margulies. Yeah.
Juliana Margulies.
When she left the
ER. Right.
So then had another smash hit show.
But that's what I'm saying. See, he said, I looked at him, I go, well, I just, I'm just banking on my talent and my gut. And I wasn't a dick about it, but I was like, wow.
Right.
And then, you know, she's got the biggest career ever now. It's even bigger. Yeah. But it's just like, you don't, and it's hard, because in our business or anybody's business, when people are handing you money and going, let's, and you're like, sometimes it gets convoluted. You start to think, I want to make my agent happy. I want to make this person. And you can have any job in the world. And if you're at that job and you're just not happy and you have the ability to take another job that will, you know, save your sanity.
Yeah.
There's,
You have to be really intentional about what you're working for.
Intentional is a good word, because again, it, you know, I used to plan my years around my calendar years around work stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now with Lydia, I've realized, like, I would rather plan my year around going away with her and spending time with her, and then seeing if I can fit the work stuff in around that, which you know, is because time moves so fast. One, 2 years can go by before you even realize what's happened. And if you're not, you know, if you're not nurturing your personal relationships, be it your significant other, your friends, your family, whatever, you know, that stuff doesn't just tend to itself, you know? And it's, you need to feed each other and be there for each other. And, you know.
And if you value yourself, then other people will value you. You will only be valued as much as you value yourself. So if you are willing to do whatever the network wants, whatever the executive wants, they know
you're a puppet.
That you don't have a high value placed on yourself. And the power of no, the power of saying no, or the power of saying, I'm sorry, I can't. I've got this 2-week vacation with my wife and I can't. And I never mind. I don't want to move it.
Right.
Because it means a lot to us. Only now, I mean, in my life, I've certainly walked away from things. But now people are like, okay, we'll make it work.
Yeah, most of the time.
Most of the time.
It's never as dire as people make things out to be, because they just want to solve it quickly. Let's just do that. Well, no, I really can't. Well, this is going to be disastrous if you don't. Well, then I guess it'll be disastrous.
Yeah.
And then you do it, and it's like, oh, it worked out. They can actually do it after you get back.
Surprise.
Yeah. And they try to say, this is going to be gone by tomorrow. Yeah. This is going to be gone by tomorrow. This offer is gone tomorrow. We need you now. I'm like, why? Who in their right mind would want me to make a decision at 8 o'clock at night for a...
Yeah.
It is crazy. And by the way, when you're young and you're naive and you're like, oh, what do I... And everybody's telling you, Michael, what are you doing next? And your agents are like, hey, this is a job. This is your opportunity. It's never going to strike again. Your business manager, you could use a little money. You start to go, oh, I guess I should just do what you guys want to do.
Thank you, Richard Nixon and Benicio Del Toro.
Is that what
I don't want to come out here. Hey, I don't know if I want to. Hey, what do you get? What am I going to do over here?
Flippy for real.
Is that what it sounded like?
You did these two very different.
They were great.
The first one was Nixon. The first one was definitely
I heard it.
Some kind of Nixon. But I'm glad that you are doing the podcast that you're doing. I'm glad that you're taking this journey together, and I'm glad that you're celebrating, you know, like uplifting friendships and, you know, finding gratitude and, you know, just all that stuff. I mean, you know, I think as people get older, they do start to sound a little crazier for two reasons. Number one, you tend to care less what people think as you get older. And then also, two, you realize that these types of things do take effort.
Right.
And so sometimes when younger people hear you go like, yeah, text each other gratitude. Look at these old fucking geese. It's like, this you got to do.
And here's the thing. It's not even necessarily about being positive all the time, being happy all the time. It's not possible.
Yeah.
But there is always something to be grateful for.
Definitely.
And especially when things are going wrong, or especially when anxiety is high, or especially when you're feeling lonely or like you've lost out on something. And so the idea is it's a practice. It is a gratitude practice, so that when these moments arise, we have these tools in place to help kind of combat anything that might set us off the rails.
And it's also relatability. I think it's like, you know, they can relate to the married guy. They can relate. Some guys can relate to the single guy. Some guys can relate to our...
You mean Johnny Silverman?
But you
not
also,
that show.
You also have expressed that you don't want to be single. Like that you would like to have a family.
Yeah.
But the thing you're talking about, a friend of mine refers to it as like making deposits, making daily deposits. So you're like, you're making deposits into an account, whether it's fitness deposits or nutritional deposits or emotionally health or healthy deposits or meditation deposits.
Yeah.
So that when you are challenged, when you are called upon, you have this savings account that you can pull from to get you through, you know, the lean, whatever that time is, you know?
Right.
So it is important for people to remind that. And somebody will sort of solve what dudes are supposed to do at the end of a hangout.
Can we just come up with an award?
You're special to me.
I kind of like that.
You're special to me. Yeah. And then that's it. That's sort of the release word. And it's cool. Then you don't have to feel awkward about it. You don't have to feel like, was I supposed to say something? Did it get weird? Because I have had those. You do have those moments sometimes with other dudes where it just sort of like something weird happens at the end, the last 2 seconds. And you're like, did I do something? Did something weird happen? Was I weird?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then you don't know.
I started something that was I like your special to me is better than what I came up with. And that was, like, at the end of the night, people are at my house and we're watching. I just go,
all right, get the fuck out. And everybody would kind of sort of laugh and then go. And that was just kind of the, all right, get the fuck out.
All right.
Well, there's an honesty to that.
There's an honesty to that, but you don't have to swear.
We're done hanging out.
No, that's I like you're special to me.
The end.
Can the three of us at least do that? When we're together, hey, you're special to me.
You're special to me.
Why not?
I fucking app, 1,000%.
Let's do it. The three of us will start that. You're special to me.
Great.
You're hashtag, you're special to me. That's how a dude leaves another dude.
And you are special.
What's the name of your podcast for people?
In Love.
With Michael Rosenbaum.
And Chris Sullivan.
I love
and
it's on Monday.
It's inadvertently. And it's Mondays. And it's Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
When does our episode go up? You don't have to answer that because sometimes you don't know. Like,
we
don't
know. Soon. It definitely is soon.
Yeah.
It's one of our favorites.
Well,
it's really good. It's just like
we had such a great time,
and Lydia's so open too.
She's the best.
I didn't know her, and it was so cool. I mean, I'd met her, but like, you know, she opened up.
Yeah, she did. I mean, she's the amazing thing about Lydia. One of the many things that I respect about her is that she said to me when we were dating. She was like, "Look, I will always tell you what I'm thinking." And I won't. And I guess I'm maybe it's because the business has trained me to sort of be this way. But I'm always looking to sort of like, what's the subtext?
Right.
And what does this mean?
Right.
And why did this person say this? Like, right. I'm trying to understand to try to better acclimate to the situation. And it got us into problems early on because she was like, I'm saying exactly what I mean.
You want to know why? Because I used to do the same thing. And you want to know why I used to think that way about people, because that's how I thought about people, or that's the way I was.
Right.
Like, I would say things that were not true, or that were inauthentic,
He's trying to.
Is it not the right one?
He was trying to plug a USB-C cable into a lightning port. It's fine.
So. I used to do that. I used to not really be speaking what was truly on my mind.
Yeah.
I used to be slightly inauthentic. I used to be these things. So I also assumed that the people around me were doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And as soon as I stopped doing that, I stopped worrying about whether or not other people were doing that.
Yeah. And it's in her case, she said, like, look, even to my detriment, sometimes I will tell people exactly what I think about something if they ask me, because I don't know how to be any other way. Why would you be any other way than straightforward?
Smart lady.
I'm like, wow, that's healthy, you know?
That is a smart woman.
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I just, this is one thing. Hey everybody.
Hey, guys.
Harry.
Harry, I just gotta know how you say goodnight to this. Say it special.
You're special
to
me.
Check out the kid in the sombrero. Here's a ground ball to say, throw it. You ever open a box of Cracker Jacks? This has got to be the most asinine thing. You open a box and there's no prize.
Ladies and gentlemen, Man of 1,000 Voices, Michael Rosenbaum, coming to the stage.
How do you deal with this? Because this is with you get tons of emails every day. And I don't mean to not respond to certain people, but like I have friends that I don't see all the time. It's like almost like there's your close friends, and then there's your friends, and then there's your friend, the people that you kind of hang out with, those friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's all the, and you probably have so many more than me. And it's
friends?
Just in general.
That's not true.
But it's almost like I feel like I have to respond to everybody right away. One of my friends says, hey, I don't get to see you a lot, but I miss you. And my response was, hey, I'm just at a place in my life where I'm just really working on myself,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just trying to be the best person I could be and get healthy and just, you know, and I got a lot of work, and I know you understand.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because that's you being honest. And, you know, like, it's you. I would say that's a perfect response.
Do you have an email time? Do you say, hey, I'm going to do emails from 11 to 1 and then I'm done till the evening?
Or I should, but I don't.
Or you just do it all day?
I just do it all day.
I'll tell you this. I do not look in my emails unless I am prepared to answer the emails.
That's a great way to do it. I never thought about doing it that way.
Whoa!
Because what will happen?
Special man.
What will happen is, what happens? Text messages too, because I'll look at them, read them, and go, "Hey, back to that person." 3 weeks later, I'm laying in bed and I think of,
"Oh, it's the worst."
Oh my God, I never
wrote back to that person.
I never wrote back to that person. But with the things you're talking about, conservation, your energies are valuable. Your energy is gold, and which is why, as we get older, we don't spend our energies on as many different people. And there are still people who want some of it. who mm-hmm. want to be, who want to have your time,
Mommy.
who want those things, and it's okay for you to be like, I have limited energies, and I need to save at least 25% of my leftover energies for Rachel.
Yep. Yeah,
and so let's work backwards from there on who gets the rest of my time and energy.
You know what I do, though? This really helps me. This is one of the things that I've learned. I talked to you in the beginning about meditating. I wake up. I immediately get out of bed. I drink the water. I say I love you. I go back. I meditate for 25 minutes. I go walk the dogs, take them out, clean the backyard of all the crap in the backyard. I come in. I make them breakfast. I make myself breakfast. I sit down, and I look at my emails. Mm-hmm. It's routine. I will not look at my phone when I wake up, and I will turn my phone off by 10 o'clock.
I mean, it is generally not advisable to read emails first thing in the morning. I admittedly do not follow that, but you really should have time to yourself first.
I just have to, I think.
Well, when I do TM, I usually do it like right when I wake up.
Yeah.
But I almost immediately, I have a morning ritual now where I go have breakfast and then I write every morning at breakfast.
Are you writing comedy?
I'm writing stand up.
Are you writing comedy?
I'm writing the comedy. I'm making with the skits and the bits. I'm either like working on my set or tweaking old jokes or trying to find new angles on thing and just give it a little bit of attention every
day. Do you email while you're doing that? Do you multitask on that, or are you just focused on that one task at hand?
You know what's great about my email is that it is so meticulously pre-sorted in Gmail that...
What do you mean pre-sorted?
I mean, like, I've created...
Family, close friends,
well,
friends,
I've created... Business. Like, there's a lot of sorting rules, and so, like, if I have emails in the morning, it's my main part of my prioritized inbox, it's very few will come through, and the rest kind of gets sorted, you know, for, you know, all the spam stuff goes into one folder and all the stuff related to one work thing goes into this folder and it goes into another one goes into this. And so then it doesn't, I'm like, Lydia's email is not sorted at all. This is one of the funny parts about where I give
it's
her shit
just
because
sorted.
It is because she, you know how like I can't even stand to see like I can't stand to see little red circles in the corner of apps drives me nuts.
Not one.
Lydia's is like a straight fucking line across the screen. It's just like thousands of emails she hasn't read, but all of her emails are coming into the same box, so it's like spam. It's like tons of spam, tons of everything, and it just gives me heart palpitations.
Yeah.
Look at it. Doesn't bother her at all. She's like, I don't care. It doesn't bother me.
Do you have folders like I do?
Yeah.
All that beach, birthdays, Blanche the dog, Blanche the grandma, charity.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast.
Christmas morning, New Year's Michael cabin, Rosenbaum's, Secret Santa, and other stuff.
Folder selection in his emails.
And then I have all the doctors there. It's
there
all the folders.
Are literally hundreds of them.
Do you want to talk about Blanche what?
Ladies, he's single.
And boring. Ladies, if you want to be bored, head over to Michael Rosenbaum's way.
I don't believe in multitasking.
It does exist. It's just not great.
It's terrible.
We're terrible. We're guys.
When
guys
I multitask, I mean, even Rachel likes to multitask too, and she'll admit. How about I do one thing really well or three things half-assed?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't know. Multitasking seems like torture.
It's that Ron Swanson's thing. You should full ass one thing.
Full ass one thing.
Yeah, you should full ass.
Yeah, my attention's been, I'm on ADD medication too. And it does help. It helps me get shit done. Like I could read stuff. Mm-hmm. You know,
I can
sound
read,
so stupid.
Can read.
I could read things. And no, but it does help me. But it's still, you know, I get distracted still on it. I do get distracted. It helps me, but I do still get
It's also helpful to know, to understand, like, what your parameters are, like, what your optimal creativity flow parameters are. Like, if you know that you're going to get distracted after, like, 15 minutes, mm-hmm. then you give yourself that focus 15 minutes and you allow yourself the time to get distracted after 15 minutes or whatever it is. You know, if you just kind of go through your day with all your activities, especially like your creative or writing or whatever you're doing, if you just sort of time each thing and sort of figure out like, you know, for a week or two, how long you'll probably have an average of about how long you start to get distracted. And if you know that, then you can sort of plan around that and give yourself the forgiveness of, I'm going to be super productive from this time to this time. I know I'm going to get distracted. I'll allow that to happen, but I know that I'll come back and do, you know, if you kind of understand that a little bit more, sometimes rather than trying to force yourself to conform to whatever you think you should be doing, working with whatever your natural rhythms are.
Being malleable.
Yeah, being malleable, but being free enough to...
It's good to remember that we make our own rules.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to do anything that you don't want to do.
But it upsets me. It upsets me when I go, okay, you are going to write music from 2 to 3, and then it's like 2, and I'm like, so you 2:10, I'm like, oh, my God.
You've put this rule on yourself, and then you just shit on yourself for breaking the rule that you made up that is not real.
Well, what if I just do this? What if I say, you know what? At 2 o'clock, or between 2 and 2:15, you are going to leave the room with your guitar and a pad of paper, and you're going to go downstairs, and let's just give yourself 15 minutes on a timer.
Well, wait, here, hang on. Just keep talking.
Okay, so what happens then in the 15 minutes?
Well, hopefully I focus and start playing music. And
you came in earlier.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You told me to give you a...
I'm going to give myself time to play some music. 15 minutes is long enough.
Michael will give himself the time to write down all his feelings.
Enjoy your burrito.
Good job, guys. We nailed it on the first take.
God, that was great.
Yeah. If anyone's still listening.
I hope so.
Thanks.
You guys are special to me.
You're special to me.
You're special to me.
Malleable.
Fantastic.
What a great ending.
Yeah.
Smart. That's good.
Katie, you're also special to me.
Special to me. Hardwick only had 3 sips. I told you. I love it.
I had 3 sips of an energy drink. I can't drink those things because they make my fart stink.
If I keep doing it, my poop will be pink. Get off the subject of poop. Get off the subject of poop.
Ooh. Come on, talking about farts and talking about logs. Why are you grilling and glitch? And that's also your dog. What happened today at a wellness retreat? Let's say you are special, cause guys can be sweet, and you're special to me.
You're so special
to me. Oh,
Katie, you're so special.
This podcast is special to me. This is us.
Weekdays at...
Weekdays?
I love it.
Are you syndicated?
Well, they will be.
That show's gonna get syndicated.
I hope so.
Enjoy your burrito.
Yeah.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
Nancy's love story could have been ripped right out of the pages of one of her own novels.
She was a romance mystery writer who happens to be married to a chef.
But this story didn't end with a happily ever after.
When I stepped into the kitchen, I could see that Chef Brophy was on the ground, and I heard somebody say, call 911.
As writers, we'd written our share of murder mysteries. So when suspicion turned to Dan's wife, Nancy, we weren't that surprised.
The first person they look at would be the spouse.
We understand that's usually the way they do it.
But we began to wonder, had Nancy gotten so wrapped up in her own novels...
There are murders in all of the books.
...that she was playing them out in real life? You can listen to Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy, early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.